And here we go. Today, we are going to talk about demand index and a little bit of the industry report. Sorry about that, Diener. I left you on there when we were doing that little quick intro. And so everybody saw that you're just staring down at your phone. Interesting conversation this morning. So just so y'all know, we're about 4 minutes late because originally it was just me, but now I'm realizing it's Dean and I. We were into a bunch of different things, and all of a sudden you look up and you're like, oh my God, it's time to go. And then we've got Mr. Jeff Dickinson joining us here too. So we're a little late this morning, but we are here, we are excited, and we are looking at what's happening with demand. And let's talk about the industry report from Jason Miller, Dean.
Yeah, we could start with how Jeff can grow such a beard so fast. Seriously, how do you do that? That is like insane. It was like...
It's Rogaine. I take it every morning at night. No,
wasn't it 4 weeks ago you had it all shaved off?
Does it work for the hairline? Because I need Rogaine on steroids, if that's the case.
Wow. I'm impressed. That's brilliant. So anyway, February imports came out yesterday, which was good. I was listening to Marketplace this morning and Jason Miller was on talking about inventories. And, of course, inventories, by all accounts, had bottomed out last August, September, according to the data now that we've got a little bit more in. And we're going through this in a bizarre way. I'm going to use the word restocking. We're in a restocking phase. So that was what was used by Tim Fiore, the head of the Institute of Supply Management, on Marketplace yesterday on the podcast. Jason Miller was also on the podcast and sort of confirmed much of the same, that we're seeing inventory starting to definitely bottom out, and there's signs that inventories have been depleted and people are starting to restock inventories, which is kind of fascinating considering it took 3 years for that to wind its way to the market. But what supports that, I think, is that the year-over-year difference in container volumes, so for February, these are 20-foot equivalent units, we are 24% higher than February last year in terms of the number of containers. Now, the caveat here is that February is always the low point in the import calendar because of the three-week shutdown in China over Chinese New Year. And why it impacts our volumes is we get about 46% of our import containers from China every month, and most of those go to the West Coast. So it's the low point, but it's not as low as it's been in many years. In fact, the only year that was higher than last month was 2022, which was during the peak.
So I got my Misakata hand up, Dean. I got my Misakata hand up. I have a question for you. The imports that landed in February, is there any correlation with the delay in the canal, the rerouting because of the Houthi rebels? Like, is there any, and I only ask that only because 24% in one of the lowest months is a huge number when it comes to overall TEU hitting, right? And I know January was down, and I'm wondering if some of January offset into February because it was supposed to land in January, but with the delays, it landed in February. Is there any way we can, or you have anything on that data?
I do. So, East Coast volumes, I'll just take off Los Angeles. I'll come to Los Angeles, but East Coast volumes are up 8% year over year. West Coast are up 27% year over year. That's the first data point to support your point, Dan. So, yes, there's more coming in because of that. That's developing into a much bigger crisis as we talk about. I think it was another ship attacked this week. If I just go to Los Angeles, which is the number one port, Los Angeles is, we just had 408,000 TEU. It's only 5,000 less than the record high in 2022 on the West Coast in Los Angeles, in the port of Los Angeles.
5,000 TEU less.
Less than.
Which is nothing.
That's nothing.
Yeah, so.
No, that's nothing.
So 2022, if you remember, that was when we had 109 containers backed up at the port on January 9. So there is more volume coming across to the West Coast for sure, Dan. Even Long Beach, those volumes are up almost double in Los Angeles. They're up 30% year over year in Long Beach. Long Beach is a little bit less in terms of its impact year over year, but definitely Los Angeles, the big port's doing extremely well right now.
And the East Coast is up.
East Coast is up, but not nearly as much. I think that's the point. Yeah. If I go to New York, New York's the number two port. Volumes are up 16% year over year.
And it's still double digits, though, year over year.
Yeah.
All things considering the freight markets, considering how soft it is, considering people's purchasing scenarios and everything, I think that's remarkable. I really do.
It kind of supports the destocking, restocking phase that ISM and Jason Miller were talking about on Marketplace yesterday. When I was listening to it, it kind of got me by surprise because I'd wondered if that was happening. Of course, we haven't seen that translate into freight volumes necessarily right now because there's still an oversupply of equipment. But there's also signs that the oversupply equipment is starting to wind its way out of the market, like that excessive supply during the pandemic. Because February numbers showed that we had about 2,000 fewer carriers leave in February compared to January, right? But if you look back to the record high of January last year, we had nearly 15,000 carriers leave. This time around, we had 9,700 in January. Hmm. And then in February, it was down to 8,800. So when you look at the black line, you know, the spread on our charts that show the difference between the adds and the subtractions, we're starting to head back now towards, you know, break even, zero, same number leaving, same number going, whereas we've been losing about 2,500 net carriers every month. Good news is for everybody in the industry, except those that are going bankrupt, of course, is that we're seeing fewer carriers exit, which tells me that the oversupply is starting to get closer to where we'd see equilibrium between supply and demand.
Okay.
Now, there was two data points. That's one data point. The other data point that was, I thought, really interesting was the relationship between spot rates at about $1.58 a mile in the first shipping week of the month, excluding fuel, exactly the same as the last shipping week of the month, of February. So the last shipping week in the spot market, shippers clear their docks. You see a surge in spot market volumes at the last week. Volumes go up, rates go up. Typically, that's how it works at the end of the month. Normally, at the first week of the month, the reverse happens. We've got less volume and rates drop. Because rates stayed the same over the course of the end of the month, start of the month, and we've got capacity leaving, that could tell us that maybe capacity has started to equal out.
I was going to hit mute there for a second.
I know they couldn't get to it. I'm out of nowhere. I got a left field.
So that's the news, guys.
Dean, I got a question for you. You know, the irony of that is that we're still seeing a hell of a lot of layoffs still.
Yeah.
I mean, you read about that constantly every single week. So if everything that you're saying is true, shouldn't we start seeing an uptick on that when we start seeing more freight moving, the inventory levels are increasing? You know, I mean, it just seems those data points that you're talking about seems like it's going to go in that direction.
Yep.
So are they laying people off too early?
Yep.
Thinking that the worst is going to happen.
Yeah, there's always a lag, right? There's always a lag. There's a lag. There's a lag on the ramp up side because it takes time to get people in place. But I think that's exactly what's happening. People are being very cautious about a very lackluster February freight market. Jason Miller's data in January showed that the truckload ton mileage was down. So I think people are still worried about too much capacity relative to demand.
Right.
But I think if you think about, you know, I'm trying to do this wherever I can see, but we're kind of getting closer to, you know, that point of equilibrium. But on the way down, I think people are still shedding those jobs. The truckload ton mile index, which to support your point, Jeff, down about 1.8% year over year. So we're still not moving as much tonnage as we did in January last year. So this is sort of this low point in the market where we start to see things pick up. I just don't know what February's going to look like in terms of you know, the final numbers, but it certainly feels like capacity's exited the market to a point where we can now start to say there's no longer an excess of capacity in the market. But maybe it'll take till March to see those numbers. I read with interest yesterday that the ITS folks out in Reno, Nevada, Paul Brescia, puts out a thing called the, if I get the name right, it's the RAMP index. It's the US ITS Logistics RAMP, Rail Ramp Freight Index. It's a really good publication each month. One of the things he said, and it really got my attention talking about capacity, he said the index reveals the most significant concerns over the next 12 months. This is in the dray sector, including trucking capacity exiting the market and container supply chain risk. So he's concerned about too much capacity exiting and leaving folks short when demand does pick up. But I think that's going to be the case across the entire industry, not just drayage.
So let me ask you this. So let's say that all happens, you know, and you start seeing the OTR carriers, you know, start trickling outwards. Is intermodal going to pick up that slack?
In terms of absorbing capacity?
Yeah. I mean, will it float over?
I would think for longer distances it might. Because if capacity starts tightening, rates start going up, shippers are going to obviously start to want to pay attention to what is a more cost-effective way. Because I think also, Jeff, and I mean, I know we've spoken about this, and again, just one person's opinion. They're like arseholes. Everybody's got them, but. you guys like that? I just figured I'd throw that in there. I don't know why, but I did. I look at it and I say, you know, so last week in preparation for today's show, after our show last week, I reached out to a bunch of old customers and some present customers. And I said, I just want to talk about kind of what's happening in your market. So I went both on construction and retail are the two markets I focused on, because I think retail determines like what we are doing as spending, and then construction determines kind of what I see construction as kind of the lead for what's coming down the pipe, right? And my customer that specializes in brick, he says in the last 2 weeks, it's gone from literally zero, where they were laying off, not necessarily furloughing, but drivers, they're trying to give as much as they can to everyone,
right?
To a point where he's like, I'm jammed and everybody's running at capacity. And we're talking, he said, Dan, it was literally within 4 days of nothing. Then all of a sudden he came in one day and all of these orders dropped. So it tells me, now again, in Ontario, so they had a massive stockpile of brick that they've been producing for the last 6 months since they've been dead, like completely dead for probably 5 months, to the point where, like 5.5-6 months ago, I was pulling 15 day loads a week out of the US into Canada of brick because they couldn't keep up. So those volumes are supposed to start picking up again because they're almost depleted their stock in literally a week and a half. And we're talking 6 million brick. It's a lot of brick. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, and then I spoke to some other customers that were in retail. And I actually went into the conversation for one of the first times, I went into the conversation with a perspective of what I thought was going to happen, and it was the complete opposite. Best years ever so far, like this biggest numbers, even bigger than COVID numbers. Right. And I was like, no way. And they're like, yeah, it's crazy. And one of them is in like the Ninja blenders, Ninja air fryers, like all these different kind of I call them tabletop like components in a kitchen,
right?
And they're slammed, Jeff. Like, he goes, we can't even keep up. He goes, we've doubled our orders from overseas. And I was actually really surprised, because you would think, based on what he was saying, is you would actually think that during COVID their numbers would be higher because everybody's home, nobody's eating out. So it's like, I don't know if you guys ever use an air fryer, but they're like the cat's ass when it comes to kitchen appliances, because like my chicken nuggets are done in 7 minutes. I don't have to wait 50. I've just like increased another 7 minutes of productivity in my day for my chicken nuggets. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I was really actually blown away with the conversations, and it's given me a different perspective of what I do believe the market's shifting to. I think we're on the upswing. And
yeah, you know something? I mean, when you look at warehouse operations, you look at FMD, forecast monthly demands, right, based on your ordering trends. It really depends on your inventory levels and how your supply chain works, where you can switch from OTR to IMDL and be able to move it cheaper because you can extend your supply chain a little bit because you have excess stock that doesn't have to be replenished right away, you know? And that may happen where you start seeing that move from over the road to IMDL when those inventory levels start going up and they start analyzing the forecast monthly demands and seeing how fast they're going to deplete that inventory and then how fast will it take to replenish it. And that's going to be like the tail of the tape and what we'll see if we see that swing or not.
Jason said something on the show, on the Marketplace show, and he said that he suspects that inventories will be kept very closely aligned with consumer demand, which means that any surge will create sort of this whiplash effect, right? And what they call the bullwhip effect, right? So you could end up with a lot more surge demand if inventories are being moderated, which in my world, what that translates into is more spot market volume because it's got to move more quickly. You've got less notice, lower lead time, and it kind of blows out the contract freight market. They contract carriers don't have the capacity.
That's what they call the overflow, right? That's what will happen. Mm-hmm. Where the dedicated carriers can't handle it, and that overflow will go to the spot.
Yeah. So on your it's interesting, guys. I just want to talk about the rates, right? You're talking about intermodal, Jeff. Let's look at Los Angeles, Chicago, which is 30% of the TU volume move on that one lane on intermodal. Right now, truckload rates are sitting at $1.78 a mile for that 2,000-mile haul. Intermodal spot rates right now are sitting at exactly $1.90 a mile. So they're a little bit higher.
No.
But to your point, Jeff, the longer transit time, right, if you've got more inventory and it's happy to sit, intermodal is still a good option.
How about the major
market? Almost 20 cents.
Are you looking at the major market?
Truckload.
Sorry.
Dean, are you looking at the major markets?
I was just comparing the two lanes. I just looked at Los Angeles, Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just curious.
Now, question for you. Truckload sitting at $1.70 and or $1.75 or $1.78 and an intermodal sitting at $1.90. So you're going to pay an extra 12 to 20 cents a mile for it to sit longer and to – that to me makes no sense.
Well, that's just on one lane, right? That's just on one lane.
Yeah.
Right. If you're looking at it nationally and then – right. Then you got to look at the government incentives for green initiatives as well. You know, so what you may not save on the front end, you may save on the back end when you're meeting those percentages – to get those incentives from the government when you go, because I mean, let's face it, you can move, a ton of freight, 450 miles for a gallon of gas on the rail, right? Because you're saving your carbon footprint by doing so. So when you think about it,
sorry to interrupt you. The government gives incentives to move with rail to companies.
Well, if they have for the green initiatives, yes.
Really?
For the green initiatives.
I've never heard of that before.
Or carbon footprints. Yeah, if you can measure that and you meet certain criterias, like, for instance, when I was with Panasonic, we moved a hell of a lot of intermodal. We had a certain percentage, or whether it was minority carriers that we used, a certain percentage of that. IMDL for measuring your carbon footprint and whether or not you're meeting the standards or above that. If you exceeded it, we got government incentives on the backside of that. So sometimes where you don't see that savings up front, you see it later on once you start submitting all your taxes and everything that you're doing, you get all that back. So yeah, it is interesting, and it's a subject that's not really talked about when you're negotiating and thinking about things, because there's so many different things when you think about your inventory levels you want to save. So you go to intermodal because you get an extra day or two on the rail compared to over the road. And that gives you a little extra time to move that inventory. So when that intermodal shipment comes in, you have space to stock it. Right. You know, it's all timing.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So it's all timing on that. So yeah, those are the type of things that, you know, when I discuss with my customers, you know, they may not be aware of that, but it's something that should be spoken about when you're talking about that, the long run, and how it will affect you, you know? And another thing too, you know, intermodal right now, they're locking in some very, very good rates for the annual business where, you know, if it happens to switch, you might be in a very good spot in the long term. However, with OTR, you know, that's iffy still. You know, I wouldn't do a long-term RFP. We talked about that so many
times. No. I mean,
I've
got a question for you guys. One more of, have you seen it? And two more of, Dean, is this from a lot of the challenges? Over the last week and a half, I have not been able to find romaine lettuce.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I'm glad we're going down this road. I was in the grocery store yesterday and I saw a nice canister of strawberries for $1.99. I was like, I thought that was pretty good. Then next to it, I saw these massive Gaylords of cabbage. Cheap. I couldn't believe it. I mean, like massive, like three or four of them in ShopRite. I don't know how many hundreds of head of cabbage were in each one of them, but for what they were selling for, I thought it was a great deal. You know, I don't know what you've been seeing out there, but you know, we talked about strawberries before and what happened in Arizona and out in California and Florida. And they're like, oh man, we're going to be paying some serious pricing for strawberries. But when I saw that, I was like, this isn't bad.
That's interesting. Our strawberries are about yay big. They're kind of the size of blueberries. Yeah. And they're expensive as hell.
Yeah, this was it was like this big. Seriously. They were sizable. And I was like, you know, they might have been like maybe 15, you know, maybe, you know, 13, 15 of them in a little case for, you know, $1.99. I was like, it's not really that bad. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about it. What are you seeing out there? I know, Dan, you just said that you're very expensive. How about you, Dean?
I've been searching quickly to see what Corey Kayla said on our show yesterday. He's our produce expert from Arizona, ANZ Trucking, and I have to go back and listen to it because I couldn't quite catch what he said. He said that the prices of iceberg lettuce are going up out of Yuma, Arizona, but I couldn't catch the reason why.
These people were diving into these Gaylords. We walked in with my wife and I'm looking, she's like, look at these cabbage. And I was like, look at freaking people. Two, three or four of them at a time, you know. I mean, let's face it. St. Patty's Day is coming up, so I understand why they got the cabbage there, right? Yeah. But man, I couldn't believe how fast they were eating that up. I mean,
just looking at the USDA. Lettuce volumes as of last week are down about 1% compared to last year. So there's less volume, even though they haven't had the water shortages that they did last year. It was 72% of the volume out of Arizona, iceberg lettuce. So the state volumes are up 5%, but lettuce volumes are down 1%. So there's less volume coming out of Arizona at the moment. Maybe that's part of it, Jeff. But we're in the transition period. Corey was talking about the transition between Yuma, Arizona, the winter salad bowl, and Salinas, the summer salad bowl. March is the transition month. Mm-hmm. But because all of that rain that we had 2 or 3 weeks ago didn't hit Salinas, it was mostly Los Angeles, a lot of the growers in the Central Valley have been spared. So they are planting and getting ready for a good season.
And you know something?
Okay.
You know, the segue to that is I just read and heard too on the news that they just declared California drought free until 2025. You saw that too?
I saw that. Is that good news?
And the only thing I can't find any data on, you know, the biggest thing is Lake Mead, because they're power generators that generate all electricity. I wonder how much, more feet came up in Lake Mead because, I mean, the main contributor is the Colorado River that goes in there. And I'm just curious because, I mean, it dropped like 40 stories. I mean, you could see it on the wall of the lake itself and all the layers, you know, over the years duck training. And I wonder how much they got in there. And I couldn't find anything on that. I was just curious.
I haven't seen anything on
interesting about the drought, considering the winter we had. But I guess, the South had a lot of rain.
Yeah, but you got to think about the snow melt, too. I mean, they got a tremendous amount of snow out there, you know, and they still just got another snowstorm. I just read, like, another one that came in.
So yeah, we did.
Yeah, you got this runoff as well as, you know, the amazing amount of rain that they received on top of that. Yeah,
well, I got to tell you guys, so since I put in the pool, we've never had to put water in it, ever, which is pretty abnormal every year normally because you drain it like 3 feet, right, to close the pool. And this year I was sitting there going, I think it's going to be the first year. And I went out yesterday and just enough to fill it. It was like, so, I mean, but I do think Canada is especially going to have a drought this year. Because especially out west, the mountains don't have the snow they normally have, still don't have it. I mean, they've snowed a little bit since it was bare, but like our winter was just brutal. Like normally we have, even where I am, we have 4 or 5 foot snowbanks, barely even a foot and a half this year.
Wow.
So it's, I have a feeling we'll see it up north here a little bit. Like, and what we noticed was there was little pockets of weather patterns as opposed to a blanket. So it was really interesting, but maybe we'll get into that in another couple of episodes. Dean, I'd love to offline if you could share with me some of that information with salad and stuff, because we've moved kind of the mixed greens over romaine, you know what I mean? So
interesting stuff.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen.
Okay.
Everybody have a fantastic day.
Enjoy the rest of your week.
Transition to close the show, eh? Like,
seriously. Yeah, got nice warm weather coming in. It's almost going to be 70 here today, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, you enjoy that.
Welcome to the HPLS podcast.
Live. Okay, hold on. And I played the intro at the end. You believe that? Jeepers. What a day today, man.